All right, everyone, this is Walker, and you're listening to 91.5 WGLZ. We have our very special guest with us here on the line today. She is an actress, and she's a very good actress, if I might add, and she was best known for her role on the television show Get Smart, and she's from the Pittsburgh area, which is pretty close to where we are. So without further ado, here is Barbara Feldon. Barbara, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you, Walker?
I'm doing great. Alrighty, so I gave you a pretty glowing introduction, but in case there might not be some people who might not know you, what is it that you're most well known for?
Well, playing Agent 99 on Get Smart, I suppose, is the thing I'm most, yeah, definitely. In fact, people still yell out their car windows, yo, 99.
Oh man, that must get old after a while.
No, I'm very grateful for it, actually. I feel very fortunate to have played that role, and it's just fun. I mean, it's never intrusive or obnoxious.
Well, there you go, then. So I'm going to start off by discussing your background. Where are you originally from?
From Pittsburgh, and you're close to Pittsburgh, did you say?
Yeah, we're about an hour and a half southwest of Pittsburgh.
Do you ever go there?
Oh, of course, you know it.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, you go there for what, to have dinner or to see plays or...
Just a little bit of everything. Just depends on what's going on.
Is that that's the nearest big city to you?
Yes.
Yeah. It was very, very different when I grew up. I was back there recently, and there are some old buildings in downtown Pittsburgh that still are familiar. But it has really changed. I mean, some people say improved tremendously. I would guess it's an improvement not to have smog, because when I was growing up, it was, you know, sometimes we'd have the lights on until 11 o'clock in the morning because it was so smoggy from
Wow.
the steel mills. But that all changed, you know, when they cleaned up the air, mm-hmm. which was great.
Absolutely. It's nice being able to breathe.
Yes, less black lung.
So where did you first become interested in acting?
In Pittsburgh, when I was a kid, I used to go to movies on Saturdays. Did you do that, too, where you grew up? Where did you grow up?
Well, I'm from Shadyside, Ohio. And it's about a two-hour drive from Pittsburgh, but I primarily am in the Wheeling, West Virginia area.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I always enjoyed going to the movies. That's always one way to have a good time.
Yeah. I really wanted to be a dancer. I studied ballet when I was in Pittsburgh. But when it was time to go to college, there was no college that had a dance program.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied acting instead, and I had done some acting in high school and enjoyed it. And I, you know, doing comedy, the show I did on television was comedy. And so that sort of came easily to me. And so when I graduated, I was really too old to continue on with dancing. By the time you're 22, if you haven't had, you know, the really right expert training, it's too late to begin that. So I became an actor and came to New York. Always wanted to come to New York. You've been here, I'm sure.
Of course.
Yeah. And it was always this romantic idea that New York was going to be a place where there was, you know, where just so much adventure and so much stimulation. And so as soon as I was out of college in Pittsburgh, I went to Carnegie Tech Drama School. And as soon as I was out of school, I was on the next train to New York. And I have basically lived here ever since, except for 12 years out in Los Angeles when I was working in TV. And the city has never disappointed me. It is so full of stimulating things to do on any given day, and just the people, just seeing people on the street, and every day is full of surprises. So That was really my destiny, was New York City.
Absolutely. It's a very beautiful place, by the way, I must add.
New York?
Mm-hmm.
Parts of it, yeah. It has everything. I mean, it has some really awful parts, too, that are just kind of bleak. Mm-hmm. But, industrial parts. But for the most part, New York now, I came here many years ago, and the streets, some of the streets had trees, but not a lot of them. And New York also has changed for the better over the years, because now it's so green here. And I think that's something that people don't expect when they come to New York, is how green the city is, you know, how many streets have trees that are just like tree tunnels, you know, just the trees, you know, making just an arch over the street. And of course, Central Park, which I live near.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can get a little bit of the country here, even though you're in the city.
Absolutely. It's always a wonderful thing being able to have the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I mean, it's not for everybody. I mean, some people can't imagine living here. But it's harder to visit, I think, than it is to actually live here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you live here, you have your own little sanctuary, your apartment, and it's usually little. So you're out of you're out of the turmoil of the city for the most part, and then you pick and choose what you want to do on any given day.
There you go. You can't beat that.
Yeah.
So how did you first get into television?
I came to New York to be an actress, and I tried for a while, and I wasn't getting enough jobs to support myself, so I became a model. And when I was modeling, I began doing commercials, and I did a commercial for Revlon that was kind of unusual. It was rolling around on a tiger skin rug selling hair dressing. It was very tongue-in-cheek and very kind of pseudo-sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day an actress, my agent sent me to do just a small part. Do you know who George Scott is?
That actor? Vaguely.
That what?
Vaguely.
Yeah, he was a wonderful actor during the 60s, 50s, 1960s, 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He did a movie called Patton, about General George Patton.
Oh, yes. Wonderful film.
And what was the one about the atomic bomb that was very black comedy? How I Learned... No. Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name of it. But he played character roles, and he was a marvelous actor, and he was starring in this TV show that I just did a one-line thing in, and that day, Colleen Dewhurst, who was another very well-known actor here in New York, mostly a stage actor,
mm-hmm.
Came on the set. She was married to him, and she said, oh, well, come on in George's dressing room, and so I did, and George said, do you want to play opposite me next week, and as, you know, in a leading role? And I was thrilled, and the people who produced that also produced the television show I did, Get Smart. So it was really good luck, and it was being in the right place at the right time. I had given up the business, and suddenly there I was on TV, and then for years I did, you know, lots and lots of television.
Mm-hmm.
So
Get Smart, everybody knows that was what you were best well known for. So what was it like working on the set of a comedy like that?
A comedy is more fun to do than a drama, because you're doing funny material.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a kind of a very upbeat atmosphere, because you're the script being funny makes the crew laugh a lot, and when things go wrong, it's really funny. and so to be on the set is really fun. It's the hard thing about doing TV, and I don't think there's anything really hard except long hours, is that you are mostly not acting. You're mostly waiting. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just sort of sitting in your dressing room or schmoozing on the set and just waiting for the lighting to be done, because it's such a technical, you know, enterprise. And so you get really, really bored, and that is the only hard thing. But it's not worth complaining about, because the rest of it is so fortunate. And then, you know, acting, you don't have the, when you're on stage, you're nervous because there's a huge audience out there. But when you're doing a film or television, it's just a few people on the set, and you don't have a sense of any audience at all, even though millions more people will be seeing you than if you were on a stage. But that's sometime in the future when they show it. So it was. There's a family atmosphere on the set. You get to know everyone and hear about their families, the crew people. And then I was fortunate to act with an actor, Don Adams, who had a tremendous comedic talent, and he had great energy. So the minute they would say action, it was just like taking off in a rocket, and I didn't really have to do much of anything except just play with him. And so, yeah, all together, it was something I remember with a smile.
Wonderful. What would a typical shooting day be like on the set?
Well, you get there, I would get up at 6, and just throw on a trench coat and get in my car, and there's nobody in Los Angeles out at that hour, really. So that was one of the more pleasurable things, was just driving to the studio. We were shooting on the back lot of Paramount Studios in the first couple of years. And the moon was still out, and that, you know, Venus right next to the moon. And it was very poetic, the palm trees and the dawn just coming up. It was, I loved that. And then you get to the studio, and you throw yourself in the makeup chair, and they ask you what you want for breakfast, and you tell them, and they, you know, put hair rollers in your hair and start painting your face, and then you're called on the set for rehearsal, which lasts about 5 minutes, just for the camera to see where you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back into makeup again and get dressed, and then start shooting at about 8 in the morning. And after the first shot, they say, okay, moving on, and then there's like a two-hour break for the actors until they get to the new set and set up all of the equipment, and that's usually when you get a chance to eat breakfast. And then it goes like that all day. After lunch, there's a big drop in energy because you've eaten too many calories, you know, and you've been up too long. And so you start trying to get your energy back by eating cookies. They always have these craft tables that are full of goodies.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, carrot sticks and apples, but they also have brownies. And you find yourself wanting to reach for the apple, but you end up eating the brownie. So you tend to gain weight. That's what happened to me the first year. And drinking lots of coffee. Because it gets so sort of tedious in the afternoon. You've been there so long in the dark. And then at 7:30, you finish, and they give you a script for the next day, and you go home and study your lines for the next day. And that's the way it went for 5 years.
Wow. That's a very, very long day.
It's a long day. That's really the hardest thing. And it's not that you're working hard. There's nothing really hard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Acting is the easiest part. The hardest part is just the hours of just being there and, you know, not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah. So, so that's really, you know, it's that's really what makes it makes you act like a child toward the end of the day and keep asking when you can go home.
Absolutely. Now, during the 5 years that you did the show, did you have a favorite episode or a favorite set of episodes that you really enjoyed the most?
There were. Of course, I've forgotten most of them now, but I loved it when we wore disguises and we got to Don Adams and I in one episode played. We both were dressed like Charlie Chaplin with the mustache and the whole Charlie Chaplin outfit,
mm-hmm.
and did the whole thing with the cane and everything. And I loved that, and mustaches. And that's always fun. And the props were fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going to kindergarten doing that show because there were, you know, like special spy props and... Yeah, I think that was my favorite episode.
I always like the props myself as well, because they're always like the props are just like so far out there in some of those cases. It's just you just get a chuckle out of it.
Yeah. Well, these were, you know, like the shoe phone, and years later, I was invited to the CIA headquarters in Langley, and they were having an exhibit of entertainment props, like from the James Bond movies, from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and from Get Smart. And they had the original props that we had, which were pretty much, you know, flimsy. I mean, they were made of paper mache or something. And then right beside that exhibit, they had an exhibit of KGB.
Mm-hmm.
Real spy things, like a pipe that you wrap in a newspaper and stand next to somebody and you can shoot poison in them and kill them.
Hmm.
You know, it was so weird because it was, and the, to have the entertainment thing next to the real thing, which is, you know, really deadly, it really gave me the creeps. And somebody who was in counterterrorism told me that during the 60s when Get Smart was on, they used to watch the show to study the props that we were using, like, I don't know, well, like the shoe phone or like the necktie that you could talk into, or and then try to make them work so that it would be life imitating art, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was amazing. We had no idea that was going on.
Absolutely. That would definitely be, that'd be something, I'm not sure how even to describe that. It'd just be such a weird feeling.
Yeah, it's really a little creepy.
Oh, my goodness. You just never know what they're going to come up with next.
Yeah. Well, now technology is so far ahead of anything that the writers even imagined back in those days. I mean, the shoe phone is like, I mean, now we just talk into our wrist,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everybody has one, so.
Yep, it's just something. So, yeah, you did Get Smart for 5 years, and then that went off the air. So then where'd you go from there?
Well, there were a lot of variety shows on television at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Martin and Carol Burnett, and they were on almost every night. So I did all of those, and TV movies mostly, and some films. Serendipitous stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now you've done some work in the theater as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've done some plays here in New York, an off-Broadway musical and a two-character play. And when I mostly, well, no, over the years, I've done some theatrical things here, but not, you know, not all that much. Mostly what I do now is write.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really pursue acting anymore, except I do love to give poetry readings of great poems. So I find that very satisfying because the material is so, so beautiful.
Absolutely. Where did your love of writing first begin?
Actually, when I was a kid, I liked to write poetry, but I never took it seriously. And then when I was in maybe my late 20s, I started keeping a journal, which I continued doing almost daily my whole life. And now I have, like, shelves and boxes of these things. But I always loved writing. I always loved putting things in words. So a few years ago, I was living by myself and really enjoying doing it. It was the first time that I'd really lived alone. And I had friends who... I would meet people who were complaining that they were living by themselves and they were waiting for Mr. or Miss Wright to come along. And so I decided to write a book about that, of essays on living alone, that would show that there are two ways to be happy. You can be happy in a relationship, and that's sort of the traditional gold standard. Or you can be happy creating a life if you're living alone. That doesn't mean you don't have people in your life. It's actually you have more people in your life when you're living alone than you do if you're in a couple, because you tend to get a lot of your social needs satisfied by your partner. But if you're by yourself, it's a different kind of life, but equally satisfying in its own way. You have a broader group of friends, therefore there's like a lot of variety in your life, and you have the freedom to travel or, you know, do all the things that you want to do that maybe a partner wouldn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And to develop, to reach out to the world more, and also to have the time to reach in and get to know yourself. So I wrote a book called Living Alone and Loving It, and which was published and is still around. And then I wrote a novel that didn't work. And I'm just finishing a memoir about growing up in Pittsburgh and about a very interesting man that I was married to for a while. And about Get Smart, too. It's just a memoir of all the stuff that interested me along the way.
Well, I look forward to reading it whenever you decide to publish it.
Oh, thank you.
So what's the thought process like when you're writing? Like, what inspires you to write?
If I'm writing in a journal for years, the journal was very helpful because I needed to express some really negative things that I had no way of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
I settled those issues in therapy, but a lot of those early journals were really to help me express on the page and what I was feeling inside, because often we can't be clear about our feelings unless we say them out loud or put them in writing. So the journals were really an aid to me at that time, but over time, as I had less that I wanted to express along those veins, I just loved to write down ideas that I got from things I saw during the day. For example, the other day I went into the park and there was an older person with somebody who was helping them, with, you know, like an aide, on a walker, just inching along. And at the same time, there was this little boy who came out of a playground, and the juxtaposition of the beginning of life and toward the end of life, it was just so poignantly, you know, demonstrated in, you know, in the sunlight, you know, under the trees in the park that day. I mean, that's just a minor example, but, and then I love to write essays, you know, about my thoughts about things.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. I understand completely where you're coming from when it comes to writing. I've done a little bit of writing myself. Not a lot, but like, just whenever I think of something, I just write it down. I've always wanted to, I've been working on a novella for a number of years, but nothing's ever really come out of it. So one of my goals has always been to finish that, but I just never have the time. So it's like, how do you make time to write?
Well, writers who are like real writers, who publish, they almost universally have a schedule, and they, if they have to get up at 5:30 in the morning, they get in however many hours they have assigned that they do every single day. I have a friend who is an historian, and he has a huge busy life in addition to writing, but he gets every morning, he is at the typewriter at 8 o'clock. He takes a break for lunch, goes out of his apartment for lunch, comes back, writes until, I think, 4 in the afternoon, and then stops. And then he goes out to dinner and does whatever he does in the evenings. But it is every single day. And during the time that he, when I met him, he was just starting a new book, and that was 5 years ago. It's now published, and it's 1,000 pages.
Oh, wow.
Polished pages. And in the meantime, I've been working on this little memoir that I'm writing, which is 100 pages long, for longer than that, you know? So he is the real deal. To me, I don't write to have a career, and I don't write to make money. I write because I love writing. And I think you have to decide which kind of writer you are. But the fact that you wrote a novella, did you finish it?
It's,
you know, the ending of it and everything?
Like, everything's there. I'm still, like, tweaking it. Like, it's not, like, in the right order. There's still some things I'd like to add, but the beginning, middle, and end, it's all there.
Yeah. Well, is it, I mean, you, what your main thrust in life is communication or writing or?
Well, I'm a broadcast major, but I have a journalism minor, so it's kind of both.
Both, yeah. Oh, I wouldn't give up on it. I'm, to me, there's nothing like writing. I mean, as you know, if you've written that much, that nothing is missing when you're writing. Nothing. You're not reaching for anything. You are just so absorbed in the moment, and it's a wonderful place to be. Did you find that when you were working on it?
I mean, when I would be working on it, I would just get really into it. Like, sometimes you just get lost in the writing sometimes. You're just that far in.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, and what a nice combination of things, because writing is so interior and so solitary, although it doesn't feel solitary when you're doing it because you're so absorbed. But and then communication is, broadcasting is so connected to people. To have a combination of that would be ideal.
It's like the best of both worlds in some senses.
Oh, absolutely. So did you write this novella for your studies in school, or did you just do this because you wanted to do it?
Well, it's a little bit of a combination of both. I had written some short stories during high school just because I'd always had an interest in writing. So I had this one idea that I really liked, and then during my senior year of high school, we participated in National Novel Writing Month Challenge, NaNoWriMo. It's held in November every year. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or not, but I decided to expand on the idea. And I worked on it. I never got it to novel length, so I settled with the fact that it'll most likely stay between 60 and 120 pages. So
Right.
I worked on it, and by the end of November, I think I'd gotten to about 40 pages, but I had stuck with it for a little bit longer. We're up to about 70 pages now, but it's just a matter of making time to finish it and just being able to get into it and have enough time to really give it my all.
Yeah, and you do need time. I mean, you need time when you're not actually doing it. You need time just to think about it and just wander around in circles while your unconscious is doing the work for you. I mean, right now, my dining room table, I wish I could send you a picture of it. It has like 150 Post-its all over the dining room table because I finished the memoir that I'm writing and I hired an editor to look at it. And she said she liked it, but she said it has to be totally restructured. The first part of the book has got to be integrated into the middle and the last part. And it is so daunting, I can't tell you. And so I have every little section of the book identified, some in blue Post-its, some in pink, you know, and I'm just shuffling them around. And my, this is the hardest thing. I mean, writing is so much easier than reorganizing. But I'm determined to finish it.
Well, hey, there you go. You gotta have that goal set, and you're gonna finish it. It's just a matter of when are you gonna finish it.
Yeah. And life does interfere. I mean, there's no question. I also get up very late. If it would be helpful if I got up like other people do, but I don't get up until 11:30 or 12 in the morning. So it makes a short day. So lots of things interfere with writing.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. We're getting close to the end of the interview, but I just have a few other things I want to add in.
Okay.
Do you have any advice for younger people who would either want to go into the field of acting or into a writing field?
It would break down into two things. One is practical, you know, the practicality of it, too, because it's so interesting both with acting and with writing, that if you're an actor and a writer, you're an artist. And what you need to do is also be a business person, you know, in order to get the thing out there or to, you know, to know how to organize to get auditions and that kind of thing. And I don't know how actors ever break in. I've seen, I mean, I had a lucky break, and a lot of people I know who did sort of in quotes make it in the business were had luck. You have to be out there to have luck, you know. You can't sit at home and I would just say keep doing it on any level at all, that eventually, you know, if it's it, and just hope for the best. You know, if you want to be a writer, right, you know, there's this wonderful, it's E.B. White, it was, The Elements of Style, is this little yellow book. You know this book, or you don't know it, maybe they don't give it to you anymore. It's a tiny little narrow book, and it's called The Elements of Style, and it's like everything you need to know to write. It condenses all of the, you know, how to use a semicolon and all of that. How to organize a sentence, and it's done so in such a compressed manner, you know, it's so utterly helpful. But in the introduction to that book, the introduction is by E.B. White, who was a great writer. He said there's one way to learn to write, and then he had in big capital letters with exclamation points, read. read, read. And I think that's probably the best advice anybody could get, that when you read, you absorb, you know, just without trying to analyze it, you absorbed good writing, if you're reading good writing. And I would say be careful to read the best. Read the best, and you will get better. And the same thing about acting. When I was in acting school, the thing that helped me the most was just the mileage I got by getting up and doing scenes. But I really wasn't helped at all by some acting teacher trying to give me some kind of technique. Mm-hmm. To me, acting is the same as writing. You learn by doing it. So if you want to be acting and wanting to be improving, keep doing it in a class, in a workshop, you know, start your own theater, whatever. Just keep getting up and doing it and watching it. So you look at the best actors and just watch what they do and watch what they don't do, you know, because really, really fine actors are very, very efficient in what they do. They don't do anything extra. They don't indicate anything. They think, you know, so it's just simply narrows down to thinking the role. And so if you watch it and do it, watch it and do it. And the same thing with writing, read and write, read and write. Simple. And so enjoyable. I mean, because what could be more wonderful than reading the great books, reading Tolstoy, mm-hmm. and Chekhov, and, I mean, oh, my God, Edith Wharton. I don't know if anyone even reads, you know, I'm sure Tolstoy. Well, in your literature classes, what books do you read?
Oh, let's see. Now, I haven't taken the literature courses I need yet, but in English, we've read a variety of different things. We've read some books about the liberal arts. I'm blanking out on who the authors are. But that's something that's really been able to open my mind up.
Yeah.
And then let's see. I've read a little bit of everything over the years in different English courses. I've had Hemingway. I've had some Shakespeare in there. I've had, let's see, who else? My goodness. Put me on the spot now.
Sorry, no, I don't mean to do that.
Oh, that's all right.
But, no, I understand that. I'm sitting in a room that has a bookcase to the ceiling. And it's full of books. And if you said to me right now, name 10 of the great books you've read, I could get about 4, you know, and then I'd be thinking, oh, my God, you know. But I can't imagine life without reading. That's why I stay up late at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it opens the world, doesn't it? I mean, that's how you learn how other people live. I'm reading a book now that this woman wrote about the four women that John Singer Sargent, the painter,
mm-hmm.
painted. His paintings are these romantic portraits mm-hmm. of these women during the late 1800s. And she takes four of these portraits, and then she researched the lives of those women. And they all cross, you know, each other's paths. And it gives you such an inside look at how the gilded age lived, and how these people who were born into money in the early, you know, big money Americans who went to Europe and married nobility, what going inside their lives, like Downton Abbey, you know, mm-hmm. like, did you watch it by any chance?
I didn't watch the whole series, but I did watch the first two seasons of it.
Yeah, but just getting an idea
mm-hmm.
of what it was like to live in those places. I mean, how would we know that if we didn't have plays and movies and books to show us how much bigger life is than just our little lives.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of it. It really is the beauty of it.
Yeah. And there's just, it's endless. You can never be bored in life. There's no way. If you're bored, then you're just not looking, you're not looking far enough or deep enough or in the right places.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's what life's about. It's about the excitement of using your curiosity and with enthusiasm and just enjoying the marvels that are available. And of course, in New York, they are, especially because we have so many great museums and, you know, concerts and things like that here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, as we get ready to wrap up our interview, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to hear today?
No. Tell me a little about your listeners.
Well, we have a mixed variety. I mean, we're on a college campus, so we automatically have college-age students, the faculty members, the surrounding community, and so we get like a little bit of everything. We have people from like the age of 20. We get people that are like 70. So we have a nice variety that listen in.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that sounds interesting. I mean, when I went to college, there were a couple of courses that really made an impression on me. One was a writing course.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was called Thought and Expression. It was, you know, how to think. And one of the big things I learned was how to read a newspaper and notice if the way the article is being written slants it one way or another by using certain words,
mm-hmm.
you know, that not to just accept everything we read in the paper, but to analyze the person who's writing it in a sense by how they're expressing themselves. The other was a psychology course, which has remained one of the most interesting things in the world to me, is just psychology. But of course, that's what novels are about too.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I learned from most were other students, you know, other people who came from different walks of life and opened doors, you know, that I came from, you know, a small community outside of Pittsburgh. I'd never been to a concert or anything. And there were kids who came in from New York and they always went to the concerts and, you know, got the New York Times every Sunday and that kind of thing. But it was learning from other kids' lives, and it's such a great opportunity and, you know, such a wonderful time to not be, you know, out there, you know, really sweating, having a career going and just having so much wonderful information going into your still young brains that are so receptive and eager to have it.
Mm-hmm. It really is wonderful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's where I was introduced to great books, and if it can, I think it's unfortunate that liberal arts, I have the liberal arts curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Is not as in fashion now as it was, or is in favor. And has been sort of, I think, superseded and tell me if I'm wrong about this, by specializing.
Yeah.
And that's a shame because we can't, specializing in life is a very narrow way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And the liberal arts opens us. And even though we have a specialty later, where our focus is for a great, you know, a great part of our day, but the liberal arts, literature, music, all music, anything, just a smorgasbord of other flavors in life other than just making money,
mm-hmm.
just surviving, just, and I think it's everywhere. I think you don't have to be in New York to have that, you know. I think that there are always people around who read and want to talk about books or and TV. I mean, what it offers us, documentaries, and just, you know, it just makes me sad that people maybe specialize to the extent where they're missing some of the glories of living.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you on that note.
Yeah. So.
Well, alrighty, Barbara. This was a wonderful interview.
Oh, I'm glad you. I enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you well in both of your interests.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to reading your memoir when it's finished.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. You have a great day.
Okay, I enjoyed talking to you, Walker. You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Miss Barbara Feldon, the actress from Get Smart, and one of the wonderful writers of our generation. So we are now going to get back to the music. Here is Secret Agent Man on 91.5 WGLZ. Till next week, have a good week.